This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Hi, everybody. Robert Evans here, and my novel, After the Revolution, is available for pre-order now from akpress.org. Now, if you go to akpress.org, you can find After the Revolution. Just Google akpress.org, After the Revolution. You'll find a list of participating indie bookstores selling my book. And if you pre-order now from either these independent bookstores or from AK Press, you'll get a custom signed copy of the book, which I think is pretty cool. You can also pre-order it in physical or in Kindle form from Amazon or pretty much wherever books are sold. So please Google AK Press After the Revolution or find an indie bookstore in your area and pre-order it. You'll get a signed copy and you'll make me very happy. The Dollop crossover special event, week three of our Henry Kissinger series. And the stress is getting to everyone. David and Gareth fighting viciously.
I've been quite calm. I just when I'm attacked. Constantly.
Like Henry Kissinger, I am attempting to maintain a balance of power between you and a state of detente.
You get it. Mm-hmm. You have the answers.
Yes, yes. Our podcasts are now bombing Cambodia.
Finally, a show that I relate to.
Oh boy! Well, this is week three. Can y'all believe we're already in the home stretch of this series?
Is it week three?
Yes.
Wow.
Episodes 5 and 6 today.
We've been living together for 3 weeks.
I know. Most podcasts don't make all of the guests live together, but
how do they do it?
Yeah, I think with like the internet.
I'm gonna have to look that up. In my dictionary.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed our time here. I don't want to leave. So, I mean, but yeah. We should. I got to go back. Dave has a family.
We could do another couple of episodes on Henry Kissinger, but, you know.
Let's just do one a year for the next, like, 5 years.
There we go.
We'll be like a reunion show.
Yeah. What's Henry Kissinger up to?
A revival. Yeah. There's probably more chapters coming.
Yeah. Hopefully just dead soon. Hopefully dead is what he'll be up to.
I don't think that ends it. Somehow I feel like That's not going to be enough.
Yeah, we'll be doing the episode about how Henry Kissinger brings the army of hell back through a portal somehow fight on both sides of the Ukrainian war.
And the army of hell's been misled as to the rationale. They're like, you said that there was going to be a lot more slavery here. Guys, wait, follow me. Come with me. I'll show you where they hide the WMDs.
Mm-hmm. Henry Kissinger.
I should have studied Kissinger's accent before this. Mm-hmm. Totally blew it.
Yeah. You do have an ear for accents.
It's all right. Really do. This will be so iconic that it will retroactively become Henry Kissinger's accent. Kind of like the Nazis are now British.
I do one Kissinger accent. I nail one thing. Hello, Kavner! That's the only
really good.
Perfect. Wow, it's like we're there. It's like we're in the Oval Office.
I am excited for when, what's his name? The guy who did Vice, that director. What's his fucking name? You know the movie I'm talking about. The Chaney movie.
Yes, yes. Adam McKay.
When Adam McKay does his Kissinger movie in 10 more years, he'll use that accent, David.
That'll be great. Dave will be on set coaching Christian Bale. Yes. You know, you're saying hello, and it's really more allo. Like aloe vera. Mm-hmm.
So here at Behind the Bastards, and at the Dollop, which Behind the Bastards is the Kirkland brand version of, we like to ask questions that historians all too often try to ignore. Namely, how did bad people in history fuck? So,
what's happening?
We're talking about how Kissinger boned. Are you excited for this, Dave?
No, now I want to go. Can I leave?
I think he wants to absolutely go to take care of himself, if you understand.
You know, it is important to both cover the historical crimes of a guy like Kissinger and to get some personal color. And since we've spent four episodes talking about his beliefs and his acts and power, it's only fair that we now turn our fuckeroscopes onto his sex life.
You like this episode's going to have bass under it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think the best way for me to start this segment is by reading a quote from a September 15th, 1971 article in the San Francisco Chronicle. As a warning, guys, there is a 30% chance this is going to give one of you a stroke.
Oh, no. You mean we're going to be stroking it or actual stroke?
that is impossible to say.
Okay.
Quote, Henry Kissinger, sex symbol of the Nixon administration.
Sorry, I'm going to bite a stick. Let me bite a stick. I'm just going to bite a stick just to be safe. I'm just going to get a branch in my mouth.
Steps out of his office onto a sun-drenched San Clemente terrace with a cup of black coffee and sits in a white deck chair with his legs crossed. The man who has pressured Moscow, drafted State of the World addresses, advised the president to enter Cambodia, and paved the road to Red China appears as something of an anachronism in his baggy, midnight blue cotton trousers, tie shoes, bright blue unfitted blazer, blue and white striped shirt, and striped tie.
What?
You guys holding in so far?
I mean, what?
Fuck.
Embedded reporter, L.L. Bean.
Why?
I can't imagine combining the fashion sense with the war crimes.
It's so good. Because they acknowledge the war crimes and then go like talk about how he's dressed.
It's like Henry could be walking down a catwalk like you'll see Henry right now in a tight white pantsuit. You can see it sucked to him. Henry also known for ruining Cambodia and Vietnam. Spin
Some
around,
continue comes, the quote.
Here comes mass murderer's sex machine.
Mm-hmm.
Kissinger, oh no, it's an open robe.
On the back wall, you can see some victims of the Agent Orange campaign in northern Vietnam. And
yes,
on Henry,
that seersucker.
You could notice the outline of his hog in those, I don't know, fancy pants brands. Otherwise, I would have finished that joke. But I'm going to finish the quote now, because by God, there's more. What are you trying to do? Seduce me? Henry will tease as he notices his visitor's hot pants. You know I like these hot pants very much. Then he'll light your cigarette, touching your hand as all Continentals do, offer you a cup of coffee, and discuss trivia as readily as he would a Sino-Soviet entente. The impeccably tidy image is perfect for dealing with Alexei Kostchin or Zhao Enlai, or lecturing at Harvard, but one cannot help wonder if the movie stars mind that the ankle socks of Washington's greatest swinger are falling down, or that his wiry chestnut hair, which flashes golden in the intense white sunlight, is too close cropped to run their fingers through, or that at least 10 of his 178 pounds protrude over his thin black belt, somehow shortening his 5'9". But suddenly, an electric twinkle will flash through the intense blue of his eyes, and one catches an inkling of that movie star magnetism, that special quality which causes some people to call him Cuddly Kissinger.
No!
How is that the craziest thing that's happened so far? How is that? How did that happen?
Oh,
my
man.
God, this is worse than war crimes.
Yeah, this is...
Oh, my God.
A bottom below the bottom, folks.
Can we go back to just murdering hundreds of thousands of Cambodians?
How did that happen?
What in the fuck just went on? Is this a guy or a lady writing this?
I think it's a lady. I'm certain it's a lady. Yeah.
So she wants to fuck him. She wants to, or the dude wants to
Well,
fuck
who
she
wouldn't? He holds your hand when he lights your cigarette.
Why do we have to talk about Kissinger's chest hair?
Why? Why indeed? Why indeed, David? Because
and can we napalm it?
Mm-hmm. This is what napalm's for, right?
Speaking of palm, a little pomade in that hair of Henry's.
This has convinced me there is a place for the B-52 bomber.
In his pants. Boy, that's what Henry calls little Hank.
Bafflingly, almost impossibly, it is not hard to find articles written at this exact sexual tenor. And unfortunately, I would love to tell you guys that I'm sure this was like a satire or a joke, but people were weirdly serious about this kind of shit. In 1972, and there's no way you're ready for what comes after this part of the sentence. In 1972... The Playboy Club hosted a poll of the bunnies and asked them who was, quote, the man I would most
do
like to go out on a date with. Henry Kissinger was number one.
Oh, my God.
What in the fuck?
No.
What a horrible indictment of... This is the worst indictment of America that has ever been.
This is the most damning thing you can say about us right here.
Boots on the ground in the Playboy Mansion. What? How is that? I can't. It's like we're in the Back to the Future Biff timeline.
Well, hold on. The man who massacres hundreds of thousands knows how to fuck. That's just an old saying.
Mm-hmm. That is. That is an old saying.
I want to fuck you like I fuck the people of Vietnam over.
So once the first few articles about Henry Kissinger's, you know, sex symbol etude dropped, Kissinger himself started being questioned by reporters about the phenomenon. His standard reply became one of his most famous quotes. Power is the ultimate aphrodisiac.
Ugh. I mean, people are attracted to psychos too. Like Ted Bundy had like a fan club and I've been compared to Jeffrey Dahmer a number of times looks wise, yes. Which has always been a pleasure.
And you're both very handsome young men.
And yes, thank you so much. And both still in the primes of our youth.
Absolutely.
You feel like there is a separation with him and what it just seems very like a very strange connection.
It's baffling. Other than that, like, here's the sad thing. We're going to get to this. It's not just that he's powerful. And the other thing about him that makes him women so attracted to him is like bleak in a surprising way. But we'll get to that. So famous women loved being spotted on Kissinger's arm. One night, he was sighted at the Trader Vic's in the Los Angeles Hilton, flirting and holding hands with Jill St. John, who played the very first Bond girl.
Fuck?
What?
Come on!
He dated the first James Bond girl.
Come on! The Hague! He needs to be in The Hague.
Yeah, and so does Jill St. John, to be honest.
Jill St. John fucked that little fucking murder troll. Well, that is so horrifying.
Who
put a pin in that part, but
who goes from Bond to murder Munchkin?
I mean, Bond is kind of a murderer. Like,
yeah, but he's a good guy.
He was.
Come on, always the good guy.
So While they were out on this date, Jill St. John and Kissinger were spotted by Ann Miller. Ann was a dancer. She's famous dancer at the time. She approached Kissinger and, quote, in a friendly way, these are the words of biographer Walter Isaacson, criticized him for having fun in public while our boys in Vietnam are getting their heads shot off. Kissinger responded dourly, Miss Miller, you don't know anything about me. I was miserable in a marriage for most of my life. I never had any fun. Now is my chance to enjoy myself. When this administration goes out, I'm going back to being a professor. But while I'm in the position I'm in, I'm damn well going to make it count.
I mean, really avoiding the
central
accusation.
Issue.
I mean, like, you know, at no point does he acknowledge that that is an unfair thing he's doing. He's just like, look, come on, even us, you know, psychopaths need to have some fun.
Yeah, and it's. I mean,
it's nice to hear someone like approach him and say something like that too.
Yeah, yeah, and of course she approached him for not doing right by our GIs, and as opposed to not doing right by millions of Cambodian and Vietnamese and Bangladeshi.
It's a morsel. It's a morsel.
Laotian, yeah, civilians. But yes, it is a morsel.
I did something similar to the lead singer of the Counting Crows. I went up to him and said that his band was bad, and they drove me crazy.
So your band's a war crime.
You know, Dave, you might have had more of an impact if you'd criticized him for playing his music while our boys in Vietnam are getting their heads shot off.
Oh, Matt,
you would have had some trouble parsing that out.
Sir, are you okay? Yep, up here playing your jam band while our boys in Vietnam are out there dying in the mud.
Face down in the muck.
How dare you? I think you have the wrong person. You're the kind of gross. I know what you did. Something about a parking lot.
that you are edging up on my favorite conspiracy theory, which is that the Tonkin Gulf incident was engineered by the Counting Crows in order to sell albums several decades later.
Well, we know it was. We know,
absolutely.
That's a fact.
That seems proven at this point. So, biographer Walter Isaacson describes Kissinger as having, quote, the boyish glee of a senior on prom night and the twinkle of a middle-aged rake. He regularly had, quote, striking blonde women come with him into the White House on lunch dates so he could show them off to his colleagues, telling a coworker on at least one occasion to eat your heart out. So he's very much like bragging to other dudes about the fact that being Henry Kissinger has turned him into a sex symbol.
He just had a gun and he was like, no, literally, eat your own heart.
So it was known that Kissinger's notorious temper could be somewhat offset by tossing young women in front of him. When his staffers fucked up and had to give him bad news about a scheduling issue, they'd send the youngest female secretary they had to go and give him the news. The White House press office used Diane Sawyer for this purpose.
Oh my God.
Oh, no.
Eventually, the two started dating.
Oh my God.
Fuck.
I mean,
Jesus Christ.
She should not be allowed to still be doing news. I mean,
I know, right?
You need to have your news license revoked.
Do you think he just comes pure poison?
Oh,
yeah.
It's like sarin gas.
Yes.
It's just like a gas slowly releases.
Yeah. We could harness Henry Kissinger's cum to get Europe off of Russian crude.
They're going to drop the Kissinger goo on us.
Diane Sawyer later told New York Magazine, quote, the power of Henry working a room is still seismic. All of a sudden, everybody wants to step up their game and say something he'll find interesting or funny. And, you know, I don't know how much of this is just like his... he's clearly a charismatic man, right? He clearly has...
It feels like It's dinner for schmucks, and he's like the rube. Like, it feels like it's not...
Everyone's just doing like, this as a bit?
Everyone's just doing a bit. Like, it's just like, it's incongruent with the person that I see and hear about, that you're like, oh my God, if you could get in a room with Henry Kissinger, just get right next to him. You will not leave his side.
Yeah,
not only, obviously he's sexy. Obviously he's sexy.
Who wouldn't want to fuck Henry Kissinger, of course?
Who would want to?
Now, this is all profoundly upsetting, but it gets bleaker. So, if Walter Isaacson, who's probably Kissinger's best biographer, if Walter Isaacson is correct, the reason all these women liked hanging around Henry wasn't just that he was powerful. And no, it was not that he had, you know, incredible dick game, which I'm sorry for saying that in the context of Henry Kissinger.
Don't ever say that again.
I appreciate it.
We just plunged in the rankings.
I believe that's a fireball offense.
Yeah.
I'm going to quote now from Kissinger, a biography by Walter Isaacson. Kissinger's secret with women was not all that different from his one with men whom he wanted to charm. He flattered them. He listened to them. He nodded a lot and he made eye contact. But unlike the way he was with most men, Kissinger was exceedingly patient with women who wanted to talk. Very few men in the 1970s actually listened to women, according to Betty Lord. Henry talked to you seriously and probed for what you knew or thought. He was someone who could and would make a Jill St. John feel intelligent or a Shirley MacLaine feel politically savvy. Next to Ingmar Bergman, he is the most interesting man I have ever met, said Liv Ullmann. He is surrounded by a fascinating aura, a strange field of light, and he catches you in some kind of invisible net. Over long dinners at public places, he would listen with sympathy while women talked about themselves, their lives, their hopes, and even sometimes their slightly wacky New Age philosophies. He would call them on the telephone late at night and talk for an hour or more at a time. He was a great friend, especially a telephone friend, always there when you needed him, said Jill St. John. The dirty little secret about Kissinger's relationship with women was that there was no dirty little secret. He liked to go out with them, but not home with them. His fascination with affairs tended to be foreign rather than domestic. Henry's idea of being romantic was to slow down his car when he dropped you off at a date, said Hauer. He may have been, in fact, the most celibate lecher in Washington. People say, yes, he doesn't do anything with these girls, his friend Peter Peterson once remarked.
Wait.
Well, yeah.
What is happening?
The fuck is happening? So he's a little asexual lesbian? I don't know if
he definitely had sex, he had relationships, he had kids. But I think the being seen with women, the being seen as a sex symbol wasn't, but I don't think he had a particularly high sex drive. I don't think he's going out and like fucking his way through like famous people. I think he likes being seen in public with beautiful women. And I think beautiful women, number one, he's safe. Like he's not going to pressure you for anything.
Yeah,
and number two, he'll actually listen to you. Like he's good company.
It's an extremely low bar.
So, it's really bleak, right?
There is like something to that. You know, it's like, he's doing, yeah, I mean, I think that even now with guys, like when I'll hear like guys talk, you're like, yeah, it's like, just be respectful and it'll probably get you like, I mean, it at least makes you not an asshole.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know what it is? I think the women in this situation are getting something out of it, right? Being with Henry Kissinger gets you in the news. It raises your profile. He's extremely famous and powerful. And you get taken maybe even more seriously, you know, as a woman who's a journalist who wants to be seen as kind of intellectual. Being around Henry Kissinger, he's a very serious public intellectual. It's good for your career. And also, he's just, men in power were so much worse than they even are now, that he was like the best dude in that world you could hang out
with. He's kind of like, it's almost like a Batman villain again, in the sense that like he's this evil piece of shit, but yet he is also able to hold a conversation and not be a prick. And you're like, wow, who could pull off such opposing forces?
Yeah.
He treats women like humans. That's
exactly
his magic.
Yeah, look, literally, that is his magic.
He will look a woman in the eyes.
Yeah,
he makes the only Jill St. John feel smart. The guy is a magician.
Yeah, he is the only man in power in Washington D.C. who will like sit down with a woman and listen to what she has to say.
Right,
and as a result, he is the primary sex symbol of 1970s Washington
bar
D.C.
Is so low. I mean,
it's incredible.
It also, again, it comes down to what we've talked about before with him, which is media normalization and how it is just once you kind of create that bubble, it most people just acquiesce, and then you're just like, you know, you kind of like Diane Sawyer is just like, oh yeah, well, people don't throw bricks at him when he's outside, so he's okay.
Now, Isaacson gives an example of a typical relationship, Kissinger's friendship with Jan Golding, who's a New York socialite he dated from 70 to 71. She was 22. He's like 50. And Kissinger had been given her name by Kissinger
Gross.
Had been
Man.
Given her name by Kirk Douglas.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Kirk Douglas is the fucking hookup in this case.
Oh, my God.
So Henry calls her one day without warning and asks if she wants to come out for dinner. When she flew down to D.C. to meet him, she was met at the airport by one of Kissinger's military aides, who drove her to a fancy club where he was dining. The two sat down to eat, and midway through dinner, Henry got a phone call and stayed away for 40 minutes. When he came back, he apologized and said that the Secretary of State had needed his advice. But whenever he was present, he paid close attention to her, and he asked her opinion on issues of the day. She found the overall experience heady. The two dated for half a year without any romance ever developing. Isaacson writes, quote, only once did they go back to his apartment, and when they arrived, an aide was there fielding telephone calls. By Golding's count, the phone rang 40 times. You couldn't do anything romantic in that place, even if you were dying to, she recalled.
Who's dying? Nobody's dying to.
She wants to get fucked by the old weirdo.
Yeah, she's into it.
I must warn you, my cock is horned.
Yeah. Yeah, she said, I just don't think Henry was interested in sex. When it came time to perform, well, I just think he was too preoccupied for it. He didn't have time for it. Power for him may have been the aphrodisiac, but it was also the climax.
Oh, my God. That's what he...
God.
Oh, I know. That's a line right there.
That's what he was doing in the bathroom for 40 minutes.
Oh,
Henry. So on one occasion, Henry was more honest than usual with one of his female friends, Oriana Fallaci, who's an Italian author and a former World War II partisan. She's actually a pretty fascinating person. He said, quote, when I speak to Lee Duc Tho, who is the Vietnamese negotiator for North Vietnam, I know what I have to do with Lee Duc Tho. And when I'm with girls, I know what I must do with girls. Besides, Lee Duc Tho doesn't at all agree to negotiate with me because I represent an example of moral rectitude. This frivolous reputation, it's partially exaggerated, of course. What counts is to what degree women are part of my life, a central preoccupation. Well, they aren't that at all. For me, women are only a diversion, a hobby. Nobody spends too much time with his hobbies.
See, for a minute there, you're sort of thinking, okay, well, if he's getting something out of female accompaniment, then in a way that is, I mean, there's something kind of nice about the idea that a guy is just not like trying to fuck his way through, you know, beautiful women. Like he is just enjoying the company of women. But then the more you kind of peel back, the more it just does seem to be he's just backwards. He's a backwards person. Every part of him has just been rearranged. He's like a mannequin body of guts that fell down and was put back improperly.
Now, the surprise Kirk Douglas cameo there may key you in on the fact that Henry was also very popular with the celeb set. During a party thrown for Gloria Steinem by the talk show host Barbara Hauer, Kissinger told those assembled, I am a secret swinger. Now, yes. That's a thing he claimed.
I like any hole.
Maybe it's a joke.
Yeah, that means he's saying he likes to fuck, but all the evidence we have is that he doesn't like to
fuck. I think that's him myth-making. I think that's him saying that. Yeah.
I like to go around and touch the genitals of fucking people.
Yeah, you go to a swingers party in DC and Henry's just there putting a finger on things.
Is it okay if I penetrate both of you with the pinky rings?
I get nothing out of this. It's fine.
Don't worry, I'm cumless.
So Kissinger missed the announcement that he'd been nominated for Secretary of State because he was on a date with Norwegian Oscar nominee Liv Ullmann. He took Candace Bergen out on a date when she was a young star. She later said that he gave her, quote, the sense of shared secrets, probably the same set he gave every anti-war actress. Like he would act like, oh, I'm really against the war. I'm inside the administration, like trying to get us out of these things. You know,
psycho.
It's this like. Yeah, he's a psycho.
Psycho.
I don't know what else to say about
it. He's completely, everything we've heard is completely contrary to that.
He's the fucking devil. Yeah.
So, it's just psychotic.
But also, you have to credit, like, I don't think Candace Bergen is lying. I can imagine how you're not privy at that point in time to any of what we have, right? To any of this information we have about how much he was planning this, about what a two-faced liar he was. So maybe you believe, this man is so intelligent and is so like emotionally competent. I can't imagine him being the architect of these war crimes. He must be just, it's such a titanic system of evil and he's fighting alone to bring it down. And like,
it must be why Hillary Clinton still hangs around him. He's like, look, I had nothing to do with any of that, Hillary.
Don't worry. We'll talk about that, Gareth.
Okay.
Oh,
great.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to quote next from Niall Ferguson's Kissinger. Quote, for the press, the story was irresistible. The dowdy Harvard professor reborn in Hollywood as Cary Grant with a German accent. When Marlon Brando pulled out of the New York premiere of The Godfather, its executive producer Robert Evans unhesitatingly called Kissinger, and Kissinger obligingly flew up despite blizzard conditions and a schedule the next day that began with an early morning meeting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff to discuss the mining of Haiphong Harbor and ended with a secret flight to Moscow. A reporter asked, Dr. Kissinger, why are you here tonight at the Godfather premiere? Kissinger responded, I was forced.
By who? By Bobby, Bobby Evans. Did he make you an offer you couldn't refuse? Yes. As they fought their way through the throng, Evans had Kissinger on one arm and Ali McGraw on the other.
What the fuck is
I know,
happening?
Right? Would you have called that when we started this shit?
You've lulled us into this being okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the beginning, absolutely not. But now, I mean, imagine, honestly, like a war criminal on a red carpet going like, look, I didn't want to. Obviously, I want to stay in South Vietnam. But Bobby called.
Mm-hmm.
You know Bobby.
Oh, man. It's incredible. You know who else attended the premiere of The Godfather with producer Robert Evans and Ali McGraw?
I can't wait to hear.
The sponsors of this show, all deeply tied in. Well, of course they are, right? Like, they're the kind of people who get invited to hunt children on private island reserve off the coast of Indonesia, you know?
I've heard it's an archipelago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I refuse to believe that Hollywood producer Robert Evans did not hunt children for sport at least once. There's just no way.
Yeah. Those glasses were just scopes. Yeah.
He laughed like a man who has hunted the most dangerous game. Anyway, here's ads. Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So, for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. What's the catch? There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. All plans come with high-speed data, unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/behind. That's mintmobile.com/behind. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/behind. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. We're back. Now, in our Cambodia episode, I mentioned, and by the way, we're done with the sex stuff. You made it through.
Wow.
We did it. We did
I ripped my sweatpants. My sweatpants half ripped.
God. Please get back to the killer.
Well,
don't worry.
In our Cambodia episode, I mentioned that the illegal bombing of Cambodia was leaked to the New York Times. And this was a big story, and it prompted Nixon to suspect that Kissinger's liberal staffers had been the ones who had done the leaking. And so after this gets leaked, Kissinger and Nixon work together to orchestrate a wiretapping program. While Kissinger initially ran the whole program, he was actually in charge for only like a day. Nixon decided pretty quickly that he didn't trust Kissinger after all, namely because Herbert Hoover expected that Kissinger was the one leaking things. And this is because Kissinger absolutely was leaking things. Now, he was not leaking the bombing of Cambodia, right? But Kissinger had his favorite journalists that he'd leak things to. Some of them were guys he wanted to write a book about him, you know, and so he wanted them to give him positive coverage. Some of them were like leaks in order to hurt other people in the administration, because there's just constant, it's Nixon's, we're not getting into this enough, but Nixon's administration is just like an endless series of power struggles. Everyone is fucking over everybody else, right?
Yeah, right.
Like that's the Nixon administration.
Right.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's really quite a tale. So yeah, Kissinger's absolutely leaking some stuff. And that said, Nixon is pretty aware of who Kissinger is leaking things to. And as Walter Isaacson writes, the real reason why he pulled Henry from overseeing the program was that the two were having one of their periodic feuds. Nixon actually made the call to pull Kissinger from the wiretapping program right before he flew to Camp David and like stopped returning Kissinger's phone calls for a week.
Oh,
it's this
my
like
God.
Thing they it was like it's like fucking 19-year-olds fighting. It's very
tell him I'm not here.
Yeah.
They literally had just little tiffs and they
yeah, they have little tiffs, you know, they got their
send
them
to voicemail.
Little...
Put them to voicemail.
there's so much petty bullshit between Kissinger and Nixon. And they're very much like if you've ever been in a codependent relationship, the Kissinger and Nixon will seem extremely familiar because they'll like be fighting over some stupid bullshit and then things will get bad and they'll like come together and be like all collapsing at the same time as they're propping each other up. It's very funny.
Look, I got to
I mean,
say,
millions die, but
I'm sorry that I said that to you earlier.
Well, I've been waiting for your apology.
I can't stay mad at you.
That's how I
Who
feel
else will I bomb
you.
Cambodia with?
Look, we have too many people to kill to stay mad at each other for this long, huh?
So
get over here, you piece of shit.
Despite Kissinger Nixon periodically being angry with him, throughout the duration of the wiretapping program, Henry Kissinger retained the ability to pretty much wiretap American citizens at command. He would submit names to the FBI, who would start a wiretap on that person. When the secret wiretapping program was leaked in 1973, and it blew up into a big congressional inquiry, Nixon took the blame, defending Kissinger by saying it was his responsibility not to control the program, but solely to furnish information to the FBI. So what they claimed is like, Kissinger wasn't ordering wiretaps, he was giving the FBI information on people we thought were suspicious, and they would decide to wiretap. And it's a coincidence that all he would do is hand them a name and they would immediately start the wiretap.
Right. It's like he would give the garment to the bloodhound, but he wouldn't hunt the person.
But he's not hunting the child.
He's not looking for him.
On Gopher. Yeah. So it's also, though, like, this might be the moment that proves Dick Nixon was actually a better person than Henry Kissinger.
Because, oh, my God.
Like, shit.
Because he did, like, kind of take a hit for his team.
Yeah,
not that he wasn't responsible for the wiretapping
program,
but Kissinger
but
surely
right.
was
like,
too. Yeah.
In the land of no respect, a man with one ounce has it all.
Mm-hmm. It was like a tiny, tiny dollop, if you will, of honor from Henry Kissinger.
Yeah, okay.
And we just never see that from Nixon. And we just never see that from Kissinger. It's kind of like saying that like a cheese grater is better to fuck than the blade of a jigsaw. But, you know. It's something.
Boy, that got really.
Now that I think about it, I mean, if someone laid it on the table, gun
to your
head, you'd be like,
right? Yeah.
Well, let's
hand me that cheese grater.
Yeah. Let's grate this cheese. What do we say, gentlemen? I'm going to drop trout. Let's get grating.
So here's how the secret wiretapping program worked. Kissinger and another Nixon dude, I think it was Haldeman, would submit names to the FBI, which the FBI viewed as requests, right? The transcripts of that person's conversations then would all be sent to Kissinger's desk. So he got direct transcripts of every wiretap personally. and he would decide what to bring to Nixon. He wasn't the only guy. Because, again, Nixon had multiple, like, people kind of competing through this program, right?
Right. He's like the head writer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So James Adams, head of the FBI's intelligence division, later told a biographer that he did not think there was, quote, more or less wiretapping under Nixon than under previous presidents. What made things unusual, then, was that the wiretaps Nixon and Kissinger ordered were on NSC staff, individuals that were part of the White House family, in Isaacson's words, right? Quote, in other words, previous wiretaps had mainly been on suspected spies, potentially subversive union leaders and the like. A regular program of wiretapping one's own aides was, according to Thomas Smith, another top FBI official, unprecedented.
So, oh my God.
It's amazing. Like, that's what's amazing, right? It's like, well, no, it's not unusual to ask for this many wiretaps.
Yeah.
It's just normally on people that you're worried about, like, attacking the country, not people who you've hired.
The FBI is like, you know, we're okay with spying on dissidents, but they made us spy on their friends and we feel gross about this.
Did you see Henry Kissinger's wiretapping Nixon?
Yeah.
He's getting very catty.
Kissinger's just asked for a wiretap on himself.
Okay. I want to see what I'm up to. I don't trust myself.
You were joking, but you have accurately predicted where the story goes.
No! What the fuck? What?
This is such a weird chapter of American politics.
I don't trust me as far as I control myself.
Oh God, I am such a fucking asshole.
Look at what I was saying. Oh my God.
So these wiretaps were all considered legal at the time. Although the Supreme Court did later determine that they were illegal, it was kind of like one of these, at the time they were legal, and because of how gross they were, the Supreme Court was like, you know what? No. And thankfully, the U.S. never wiretapped people again.
That's the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Famously. That's why Edward Snowden is famous for his reveal that no one was ever wiretapped again.
That's why we don't know who Edward Snowden is.
Yes. Famous private citizen living in Ohio, Edward Snowden.
Pull a name out of the air.
Random guy. So a tremendous amount has been written on the subject of the wiretapping in the Nixon administration. I'm not going to go too into detail on it because, as sleazy as it is, wiretapping your friends doesn't quite measure up to war crimes. Like, it's gross, but it's also not that gross in context.
It's super weird. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like weird. It's a weird thing about them. There is something I should read here that reveals something meaningful about Henry's character. William Safire was a New York Times op-ed columnist and a Nixon speechwriter. He later said that Kissinger was, quote, capable of getting a special thrill out of working most closely with those he spied on the most. So, like, Safire's attitude is, like, he was doing this mainly because he thought it was, like, kind of hot to be wiretapping a guy that he
this
was working next to.
This is how he orgasms.
Yeah.
So
finally.
It's
the power thing. Yeah.
He knows he loves that he's like fucking over someone he's just hanging out with and talking to and they don't know.
It's like Sliver.
He gets like this crazy thrill out of it.
Yeah.
He knows secrets about them. Like, oh God, it's so fucking weird.
I'm going to wiretap that ass.
So he gets that quote from Kissinger, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. It's usually translated to him being like, that's why women are so into me, right? Because power turns people on. But I think it literally means that, like, he kind of gets off on exercising power, right? Like,
100%.
That's his thing.
Oh my God.
I can even fuck my friends over.
It is also worth noting that Henry wiretapped himself. Once he took office, he had a secretary.
I was kidding.
I know, but it happened.
Robert!
Once he took office, he had a secretary listen in on all of his calls and take memo notes on his conversations. He also had a series of what are called dead key extensions added to phones. These are keys that were secretly added to phones in his office so that his secretaries and aides could, like, press them to listen in on calls without other people knowing and take notes on the calls. When Nixon would call Kissinger drunk, slurring his words, Kissinger would, like, wave all of his people and be like, get in here. Like, pick up the phone.
It's like Ghostbusters.
We got one.
And then he would make faces making fun of the president while his aides listened in.
Okay. I mean,
I'm on his side now.
Take a step back and realize that Henry Kissinger is making fun of the wiretap he's called on himself while he's talking to the president who's blackout drunk.
It's something else.
While a war is happening.
It is, like, not to minimize how fucked up, you know, the current administration to the previous administration was, but by God, America still has not reached the Nixon peak of craziness in
we've
the White
gotten
House.
It in like pieces, but little we've never bits had the full company. Like, we've never had like the full team together again.
Yeah, you can't. It's really hard to compete with Dick Nixon and Henry Kissinger.
And I mean, I'm like, talking about ahead of his time. Oh my God. His stuff ages great.
Oh man. So Kissinger also used the transcripts he made to attack his coworkers and reinforce his loyalty to the president. When his colleagues said something to him that he knew Nixon would hate, or when someone made a comment agreeing with Kissinger on an issue, he would pass those notes from his secret conversations on to the president. So he would hand the president like a transcript of a call he'd had with like a thing underlined that made Kissinger look good.
Oh my God.
From Kissinger, a biography, quote, William Sapphire, who dubbed the transcripts the Dead Key Scrolls, said he once saw Kissinger altering one to shore up a point he wanted to make to the president. He had been chewing out a reporter from the Christian Science Monitor for writing a story that was unfavorable to Nixon. In doing so, he also tossed in occasional complaints about the perfidy of Secretary Rogers. Since he was planning to send the transcript to the president, Sapphire said, he had taken a draft and edited it, adding to the fierce loyalty of his own remarks. So he would, like, mark it up to make him, like, be more of a kiss-ass to Nixon?
I mean, fucking incredible.
I know! Nixon's also, like, hammered. It's like, how hard do you have to work to, like, convince this guy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, hand him a Mai Tai. Like, yeah, it's easy.
Here you go. This is from Trader Vic's. Like, you're my best friend.
I love you, Henry.
I've never had a closer friend than you, Hank.
Look at how much of your bitch I am.
The existence of these transcripts was revealed by the Washington Post in 1971, but Kissinger insisted they were just for the president's files. In reality, he used them as notes to write to his two books that he published after leaving power. But he was canny enough to know they had damning information. So when he considered quitting the Nixon administration in 1973, he had them all shipped to a bomb shelter at Nelson Rockefeller's house.
I mean, listen to what you just said.
What the fuck just happened?
I know, right? Listen to what you just said.
I know. Like, every third sentence you have to write about these guys.
You know, it feels like magnet fridge poetry.
Yeah. Yeah. He illegally hid government files in Nelson Rockefeller's private bomb shelter.
It's just like, Rockefeller,
may I use your bomb shelter for storage?
I need to put my biography notes there.
Of course. Of course, Henry. That's you know what I always say? My bomb shelter's yours.
These are what? Short stories, right? Yes.
Sure, yeah. Whatever you need to tell yourself.
I need them safe in case there's a nuclear war.
So, obviously, this is very illegal. And when Kissinger decided not to quit the administration, he had a military liaison send a plane to pick them up from Rockefeller's house. Jesus. And then he hid them in a bomb shelter under the White House.
Oh,
after he left.
What the fuck?
There's no rules for these people. Yeah.
They're fucking notes. They don't need to survive the fucking nuclear holocaust.
How great, though, if a bomb is incoming towards the White House and they all go there and it's just stacked with Kissinger papers.
Yeah. Well, this guy was a real piece of shit.
This is awkward. I think we're all going to perish.
Yeah, he's just sitting in the corner. I don't think you should read those.
So after he left office, Kissinger donated the papers to the Library of Congress under the restriction that they would not be made available until he had been dead for 5 years.
Oh, well, he's been dead for five years. We should be able to read him now.
Come on. Who makes that deal?
It's not a great thing.
The Library of Congress.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
By the way, most people do like the after I die. He wants the 5-year buffer, which sounds a little unique.
Yeah. He wants time for people to get things out of the country.
Yeah. I want to make sure I'm pure bone.
Yeah. So Kissinger was also convinced that Nixon's chief of staff, Haldeman, had Nixon wiretapped. Kissinger was also convinced that Nixon's chief of staff, Haldeman, and Nixon like had wiretapped him, which they absolutely had. So Kissinger was kind of tapping himself, but Nixon had also wiretapped Kissinger. And when he passed Haldeman in the hall, Kissinger would say, quote, "What do your taps tell you about me today?"
It's almost, remember that, like, What was it? I don't remember what it was on where Lily Tomlin was the one ringy dingy operator who keeps plugging in. Yeah. It's almost like that with wiretaps where you're just like every wire is getting plugged and crossed. Nixon's wiretapping Kissinger, who's wiretapping himself, who's wiretapping Nixon, who's also wiretapping Haldeman, who's wiretapping Kissinger, who's also wiretapping Nixon.
And that's why we know so much about not just like the crimes they committed, but like what they were saying in the meetings while they committed the crimes.
Yeah.
Because unbeknownst to Kissinger and to everyone else, Nixon was also wiretapping himself. Like he recorded every conversation that he had in the Oval Office,
which,
in
again,
secret.
Is the most, that to me is like one of the most, I mean, it's why we know so much, because if you are able to, like, if Trump or, I mean, if any of them, I mean, if you had the Bush tapes, like they would be fucking incredible. But it's also that Nixon recorded himself and then was like, okay, take them. And everyone's like, the fuck, are you drunk? And he's like, I am actually.
I am extremely, I am so drunk. My Secretary of Defense has a contingency plan in case I try to nuke everyone. Checkers
You've never
are
been
the
that drunk. No one has.
So this was a secret until the Watergate scandal was revealed at the end of 1972. Kissinger was warned about this, that like the Watergate story was about to break 2 months ahead of time. And he was horrified by the implications, namely by the fact, by the things we've already gone over at length, that he had, like, he was on tape in these records agreeing and encouraging with Nixon's bigotry and his copious racial slurs. So, like, Kissinger is not involved in Watergate, so he's like, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried that everyone's going to know that I was, like, egging Nixon's bigotry on in order to kiss his ass.
Amazing for him to be horrified. Like, of all the things he's done, like, for this to be, like, it's always, like, the weirdest thing, but it's, like, for this to, for him to be, like, this could really damage my credibility.
It's like,
people
might think poorly of me.
Yeah.
When he was asked about this later, about, like, encouraging Nixon's bigotry, Kissinger explained that the things he'd said to Nixon were based on, quote, the needs of the moment, rather than to, quote, stand the test of deferred scrutiny, which was a nice way of saying, I'm only racist around racists. In one of the most impressive feats of mental gymnastics in political history, Kissinger actually argued that his egging Nixon on was meant to protect the American people. Quote, he was so much in need of succor, so totally alone. Our national security depended so much on his functioning.
It's called yes and, okay?
he was Chicago school.
It's called the Improv Olympic, pal.
I mean, to be able to get away with that argument, it just should
That's
not be allowed.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Nixon's functioning, it's probably time to talk a little more about Watergate. As previously covered, in 1971, Nixon and his team, including Kissinger, hired a goon squad of ex-FBI and CIA agents called the Plumbers and asked them to investigate the leak of the Pentagon Papers. These guys broke into the office of Daniel Ellsberg. That's the guy who leaked the Pentagon Papers. He was a Department of Defense employee. They break into the office of his psychiatrist to try and steal records to smear him. In 1972, one of the Plumbers, G. Gordon Liddy, was transferred to the Committee to Re-elect the President. The acronym of this organization was literally CREEP, because satire has never happened even once. Like, it's impossible.
Nope. It's over. It's over.
Liddy's team executed a wide-ranging plan to illegally spy on the Democratic Party, which ended with them breaking into DNC headquarters in the Watergate building in D.C. and bugging the phones of staffers. They got arrested almost immediately. Like, that night, they get busted, right? That's, like, when this all starts. And so that's what, like, the fact that this, like, the Watergate scandal and public knowledge starts is, like, these guys getting arrested doing a break-in. Key's a crime reporter named Bob Woodward in on the case. He was not a political journalist. He was, like, a crime beat DC reporter. But he hears about this break-in, and he's like, something's fucking going on here. And he winds up making, you know, contacts with a guy who we later, eventually, like decades later, learned was the associate director of the FBI. That's Deep Throat, you know, famously. This guy gives him information. And the Washington Post under Woodward and Bernstein, right? He has a partner in it, too. Like, they're both doing very good journalism here. They start dropping articles at the tail end of 1972. And a trial over the break-in starts in 1973, January, right after Nixon wins re-election. While Woodward and his partner, Carl Bernstein, were running down leads, they got in touch with another FBI guy and asked him, hey, who kept authorizing all of these wiretaps? That FBI guy said, well, Henry Kissinger. In a lot of cases, it's Kissinger. He's like our main guy calling us. So Woodward calls Henry Kissinger, who plays dumb at first and then tries to blame Haldeman for the wiretapping. Woodward asked, okay, well, is it possible you were the one doing the wiretapping, Henry? And Kissinger says, I don't believe it was true. Woodward asked,
What?
Yeah. That's it's such a weasel answer.
He's 4 years old now.
Woodward asks, is that a denial? And Kissinger responds, I frankly don't remember.
It is kind of like nice to see the genesis, because the I don't remember thing is just utilized so much now.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's like one of the first, like, where you're just like,
I think if I just say I forgot, I can get away with this shit.
Yeah, you can imagine a young Bill Clinton reading this news story and saying, I'm not sure why, but I think I'm going to take notes on this.
I remember ejaculating, but I don't remember how that come to be.
It's also, it shows you like how insulated they were in their psychotic little dome, that once they actually take their tactics out in the real world, people are like, yeah, that's a crime and we have you. They're like, oh, yeah. Shit.
fuck.
Whoopsie.
Fuck.
The president's drunk.
So Kissinger admitted after that line of questioning that he might have given the FBI the names of some people who had access to leaked documents and, quote, it's quite possible they construed this as an authorization. So once he makes this admission to Woodward, Henry starts to get looser, and he talks about how he figured he probably should take responsibility for the wiretapping, and then he realized almost immediately, like, oh shit, I fucked up. And he asks Bob Woodward, you aren't quoting me, right? Like, he's like, this isn't on the record, is it?
That's how it works too, right? You put it on the record and then you're like, that's off record, right?
Woodward says, of course this is on the record. Like, what the fuck? Like, I never said this was off the record. What's wrong with you? Kissinger insisted, well, I was only speaking on background. Quote, I've tried to be honest and now you're going to penalize me. In 5 years in Washington, I've never been trapped into talking like this. If a journalist calls you and asks you questions as the Secretary of State.
You're calling us BFF, right?
You just wanted to chat, right?
We're just going to chew the fat for a while, I thought. How are you? What crimes have you committed, Bob?
It's fascinating.
It's so dumb.
It's so dumb. And it shows what fucking tame little pricks the entirety of the White House press corps were, right?
Yeah.
Because Kissinger thought he could get away with this. Yeah. And he finally encountered, like, an actual journalist for the once.
Yeah, right.
Like, and just like 30 seconds with Woodward and he's blown wide open.
He cannot handle it. He's just pissing his pants, crying.
You know what it is? Have you seen those videos of like those fucking, those Tai Chi champions who are like in those videos fighting their students where they're just like flipping everyone around the room, throwing them. And then like they fight an actual MMA fighter who just like takes them down in 13 seconds.
Yeah. It's like how Seagal fights where.
It's Steven Seagal.
Dare I say Putin's judo?
Yeah. It is. This is the moment for Kissinger. That's like when Steven Seagal got choked out by Gene LaBelle and shat his pants.
All right. Hey, I'm the star here.
I didn't think this could happen.
Come on now. We'll play fake.
Next, from Kissinger, a biography, quote, Woodward wondered what kind of treatment Kissinger was accustomed to getting from the press. He consulted Murray Marder, the kindly, soft-edged diplomatic reporter who covered Kissinger for the Post. Well, Marder admitted, Henry was regularly allowed to put statements on background after he had made them.
I mean, it does. And what's so frustrating is that it's like, you know, they've all kind of learned from the mistakes of this time in ways where it's kind of the same shit. I mean, everything is kind of a fluff piece. You're allowed to be in the White House press corps if you ask softball questions. Yeah. You know, this was like a major fuck up. And they all were like, well, the lesson we've learned here is don't let good reporters around you.
Yeah, don't let journalists exist.
Yeah.
It's one of those, God, there's so much going on here.
It really is. This is like, we are peaking.
There are ways in which, like, there are times when journalism does work that way, right? When I am, like, sitting down and talking to, like, a fucking dissident or a protester, someone who, like, might be targeted by the state or by, you know, fucking fascist or whatever and murdered, and they like say something and then later are like, oh, you know, can I take that off the record? I'm worried that's going to like reveal me. Yeah, of course. Like, yeah. I'm not going to like.
Yeah, you could get killed.
But like,
yeah.
It should never work that way for cabinet level fucking government officials.
Yeah.
Right.
They can't, if you agree ahead of time to make something off the record, yeah, that happens. That's like a thing that occurs, although I think that's problematic too, but like they don't get to just take something off the record retroactively. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
They care about is access. So they don't care about the actual story. They just want to talk to them again.
Yeah. They want to keep getting access. Yeah.
It is. It's like, it needs to be a group of people need to say that this is all fucked, but instead they're like, oh, what a great cocktail party.
And Woodward, to his credit, there's critiques to make about Woodward later in his career, but to his credit, Woodward's like, I don't give a shit about access. I'm trying to take down a president. Like, I could give a fuck who I piss off here, you know? Like, So Nixon eventually took the fall, as we've covered, but the issue was brought up again in 1973. When Kissinger went through his confirmation hearings to become Secretary of State. We don't need to cover the politicking he did to secure that job, but I should note all the fallout over wiretapping and the disaster in Cambodia didn't do shit to reduce Henry's popularity at home. In 1972, he had ranked fourth on the list of most admired Americans. Ugh. In 1973, he was number one, largely because Harry Truman had died. Which is also pretty bleak.
What the fuck?
Yeah, like, baby.
We are. I mean, and that's when you're like, we deserve it. Mm. I mean, if you are that incapable of deciphering reality from fiction, to some extent, you want to be taken advantage of.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're the rube who opens the door to the vacuum cleaner salesman.
Yeah.
Pour some dirt on my floor. I want to see how this thing sucks.
You need my social security number, of course.
Okay. And you promise I get $500,000 in the mail. Okay.
So one congressman proposed a constitutional amendment to allow foreign-born citizens to run for president because of like how much he liked fucking Kissinger.
I don't like
Henry. Henry received a figure at Madame Tussauds Wax Museum in London, which quickly became the star attraction. Miss Universe pageant contestants voted him, quote, the greatest person in the world today.
Is it possible that we just put a heart in the Madame Tussauds figure and melted it and that's what's walking around now?
Yeah, that's.
But this
we just left it in the sun for a week.
Like, you bring up the media, but like, this is just so like they just normalize monsters. They act like monsters are great people.
Yeah,
and people don't actually hear the fucking heinous shit that they're doing.
No,
and they just hear he's a smart guy. But it's
because that's other what people matters. Said so.
He can like quote smart dead people that you haven't read, but you know they're smart because their name sounds vaguely familiar, and so you're like, well, this guy's read all these smart dudes. He must be a good guy. Because smart people don't do bad thing.
Well, and smart people don't like go out with reporters and, you know, it would just be like, look at Frankenstein at the Playboy Mansion. Gosh, he's got those bolts on his neck and the girls love to twirl him.
So it is perhaps not surprising, even though the Watergate scandal had built to a fever pitch by 73, that Henry Kissinger was a shoo-in to be appointed as Secretary of State. On the day of his first congressional confirmation hearings, someone in the press asked, "Do you prefer to be called Mr. Secretary or Dr. Secretary?" He replied, "I do not stand on protocol. If you just call me Excellency, it will be okay."
Excuse me? Pardon?
And again, as a journalist, the proper response to that is to throw your handheld recorder at his face. Like, try to take a chair to his nose like they did to Geraldo.
Yeah,
you know?
Right,
like,
Break his face. Oh, I'm not hung up on titles. You can just bow and call me Your Majesty.
So Kissinger was extremely nervous going into the confirmation hearings because, again, Nixon is being torn apart for Watergate right now, and he was expecting that he'd be interrogated about all the shady wiretapping he'd done.
Sure.
But as it turned out, all he had to do was lie and say he'd never recommended wiretapping. Everyone decided that was fine, and he was confirmed as Secretary of State, 78 votes to 77.
Jesus fucking Christ.
And here's the thing. Even among the people who voted against him, there was not always strong antipathy. George McGovern voted against confirming him, but he called Kissinger afterwards to privately endorse him. To be like, hey, publicly, I gotta pretend I don't like you, but like, we're cool, right, bro?
And don't worry, someday I'll be the president, and I got my eye on you, Henry.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that might have happened.
Yeah, probably.
So when he was sworn in on September 21st, 1973, a family friend presented Kissinger with a copy of the Old Testament that had been published in Firth in 1801 for him to be sworn in on. Kissinger decided instead to use Nixon's copy of the King James Bible.
Which, they just open it. It's a bottle of bourbon. Oh, sorry.
It's
actually
just a bottle of liquor.
Oopsie poopsie. Let's use that other one. Let's use that Firth one.
So, alas for Dick Nixon, 74 was an even worse year for him than 73 had been. In July of that year, three Southern Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee announced that they were voting to impeach him. On August 5th, a transcript of taped conversations between him and Haldeman was released, which proved his involvement in the cover-up of the Watergate break-in and proved he'd lied under oath. This was the nail in the coffin. On August 7th, Barry Goldwater told Nixon he would not survive an impeachment vote. Nixon had already made the decision to leave. He met with Jerry Ford, his vice president, and told him that he was about to be president. He urged Ford to keep Kissinger on as his Secretary of State. Then Nixon made his big announcement to the American people. Next, from History.com, after the speech, Kissinger accompanied Nixon to his living quarters one last time. "History is going to record that you were a great president," Kissinger assured Nixon. "Henry," the president said, "that will depend on who writes the history."
Can you imagine a wasted Nixon showing Gerald Ford around like, "So this is the vodka you put that in your Wheaties in the morning. This is pineapple. You should eat this with cottage cheese every day.
Now, here's a Dick Nixon secret. If you pour a little Diet Coke in the bourbon, they can't tell you're getting drunk at 9 in the morning.
When you're confused, just nod. When you're throwing up in the toilet, say something disagreed with you and it's diarrhea.
The Secret Service agents have to let you puke down their sleeves. That's what I've been doing."
"This is the vodka room, and this is the vodka room, and this is the vodka room.
This drawer here is for letters and things like stamps like that, and this is the drawer you can puke in, but just bend over and pretend you're looking for something."
"I'm going to be honest. I've been shitting in the fireplace a lot. It's hard to find the bathroom when you're turned in the Oval.
Look, look, if you're worried, just lift this cushion up. This chair's actually a toilet with wheels. Sits behind the desk. Trying to think what else. These are laws. You can wipe your ass with them.
By the way, this is all being recorded. Everything is.
Wait, this chest here is actually a tape recorder."
Kissinger's sorrow over his boss stepping down was sopped somewhat by the fact that, right around the same time, he'd succeeded in overthrowing an actual democratically elected leader.
Oh, good.
Dr. Salvador Allende. Now,
this makes me mad.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about this in a lot of detail because we have gone into detail on the coup against Allende in both our episodes on the Dulles brothers and on the School of the Americas. It's just like this is the thing to like cut out of our Kissinger story because we've covered it a lot before. But I will give an overview of Kissinger's involvement.
For the listeners who maybe aren't familiar, Robert.
Yeah.
So I know we are all on the same page, but you're Gareth's or whatever.
Salvador Allende was a socialist dude who was elected in 1970. Like all kind of socialists the U.S. overthrows, he was not nearly as radical as they pretended he was, but he was like solidly left-wing. The U.S. backed a military coup that overthrew him in 1973. Allende committed suicide and was replaced by General Augusto Pinochet, who tortured and murdered tens of thousands of people over the next 17 years. So I'm going to be brief here, and I'm going to read a summary of Kissinger's role in that kerfuffle from the Transnational Institute. Less than a week after Nixon received the disappointing news about the presidential vote, he decided to annul the Chilean vote. A quote widely attributed to Secretary of State Henry Kissinger explained Nixon's morality. "I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a country go communist due to the irresponsibility of its people. The issues are much too important for the Chilean voters to be left to decide for themselves."
I mean, like, you need to be, like, so far gone to be comfortable speaking in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, you that's ghoulishly evil.
I mean, it's just like you could come up with a version of that would also probably sound effective, but to basically be like, "Look, the people have fucked up voting. They've wrongly voted. Oopsie poopsie. We'll do it for them. We'll figure out. I mean,
we'll take care of this
again,
for them."
United States policy pretty much, you know, all the time in perpetuity.
Yeah, and it's good. And after the bloody coup that Kissinger and Nixon endorsed, Kissinger
pushed to recognize Pinochet's coup government and offered economic aid. He pressured international lending organizations to lend money to the new Chilean government. Yeah, he sucks. This is a bad thing that he did. You can hear a lot more about it. And honestly, Kissinger was involved, but like the Dulles brothers were a much bigger part of this specific thing. So check that out in our Dulles brothers episode.
All this with Raquel Welch on his arm.
Jill St. John. I love the way you actually, the woman he does marry, Nancy McGuinness, who is also a fairly prominent person, is a huge fan of the overthrowing of the Chilean government.
Oh,
yeah. Henry. His wife is like more hardcore right wing than he is.
Come to bed.
Tell me about how you ignored the will of the Chilean voters, Henry.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know much about the working relationship Henry had with Gerry Ford. Honestly, like they didn't spend a lot of time together. We're not going to delve super deep into it. There were like too much to talk about still. There is one thing I want to note about his relationship with Nixon. Like for the first several years that he's working with Nixon, he's desperate to go to Camp David. Anytime the president invites him, he's excited to go. But then when the Watergate thing is going on and Nixon feels isolated and alone, Kissinger spends like the whole Watergate hearing time jetting around the Middle East and stuff doing diplomacy.
Right.
And Nixon begs him like, do you want to come hang out at Camp David with me? And Henry's like, oh, buddy, I'd love to. But, you know,
sounds so great.
I just got so much work.
I'm swamped over here with stuff, you know, it's like
he's such a worm.
Gosh,
it's amazing that there's a moment at this where you're like, oh man, Dick, he did you dirty.
Yeah.
That's not, yeah, you like were such you a good like friend to him.
A little bit of sympathy for Nixon's like, would you, do you want to come to summer Camp David with me? I can't.
I could really use a friend.
I broke my arm. I can't get any merit badges or anything this summer, my mom said. So,
oh man, it's amazing. So. Yeah, there's so much to talk about. I will tell you, I will note that one of the first things that Henry did as Secretary of State for President Ford was to deliberately enable another genocide, which put him just one genocide away from earning a free coffee at the Pentagon Starbucks.
Oh, so, my gosh, so close.
I know.
He's close.
He's close. He's close. We're going to talk about that, but you know what we got to talk about right now? Products and services that support this podcast.
Finally.
Hey, including Starbucks. Commit five genocides and Starbucks will fund a sixth if it reduces the price of coffee beans.
Make sure it's a venti.
Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Oh, we're back. So in 1969, the U.S. conspired with the Indonesian dictator Suharto to encourage the illegal annexation of West Papua through what was called the Act of Free Choice. This was a shameless propaganda exercise, which allowed the United States to pretend democracy, rah, 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 you get the idea. Behind-the-scenes support by the U.S. at the UN allowed Suharto to solidify his control on West Papua. This led to 4 decades of genocidal policies, which have killed huge numbers of the Papuan population. 6 years later, Suharto had another fun idea. East Timor was nearby, and near the end of a 27-year-long process of being decolonized by Portugal. Having just been ruled pretty brutally in the name of capital, you won't be surprised to hear that the East Timorese people were somewhat sympathetic towards socialism. Hmm. The leftist Fretilin Party began to gain ground as freedom grew near. In 1975, it had a brief civil war with the much smaller right-wing pro-Indonesian party. This freaked out Portugal, who pulled their last people out of the country during the fighting. Seeing the territory abandoned, General Suharto felt he had an opportunity. He and others in the Indonesian military began to complain to the Americans that East Timor might be used as a base for dastardly communists to inspire secessionist movements in Indonesia.
It's just like, you know, East Timor seems like it's going to be really bad. Yeah. Oh, we got to kill them.
We got to get rid of them.
I don't like the sound of this.
Over in East Timor, Fretilin, the Socialist Party, recognized the fact that they were in danger. They had their, we're in danger moment.
Yeah.
And they declared their independence on November 28th, 1975, so they could ask for help from the United Nations. Everyone ignored them. Japan, a major investor in Indonesia, twiddled her thumbs. Australia looked away. This left the United States as the only power that could potentially stop Indonesia from invading Timor.
Do we do it? What?
Yeah, we did it. Yes. Everything's good now. They're doing great. They're flying cars.
Yay us again.
Yeah, how many times do we have to be the heroes?
Yeah. Another job well done for the United States.
On December 6th, 1975, on the eve of the planned invasion, Gerald Ford and Henry Kissinger flew to Jakarta to meet with Suharto. The very next day, Indonesian land, air, and naval forces invaded. The timing is predominant enough that people have debated ever since whether or not Kissinger and Ford gave Suharto the green light here, too. From a write-up in The Nation, Kissinger, who does not find room to mention East Timor even in the index of his 3-volume memoir, has more than once stated that the invasion came to him as a surprise, and that he barely knew of the existence of the Timorese question. He was obviously lying, but the breathtaking extent of his mendacity has only just become fully apparent, with the declassification of a secret State Department telegram. The document, which has been made public by the National Security Archive at George Washington University, contains a verbatim record of the conversation among Suharto, Ford, and Kissinger. "We want your understanding if we deem it necessary to take rapid or drastic action," Suharto opened bluntly. "We will understand and will not press you on the issue," Ford responded. "We understand the problem you have and the intentions you have." Kissinger was even more emphatic, but had an awareness of the possible spin problems back home. "It is important that whatever you do succeeds quickly," he instructed the despot. "We would be able to influence the reaction if whatever happens, happens after we return. If you have made plans, we will do our best to keep everyone quiet until the president returns home." Micromanaging things for Suharto, he added, "The president will be back on Monday at 2 p.m. Jakarta time. We understand your problem and the need to move quickly, but I am only saying it would be better if it were done after we returned."
Worst case scenario, I'll just say I never said this and nobody will ever have a transcript if they said anything.
I mean, to be scheduling it like a golf day.
Can you crack down on the independence and freedom of these people and engage in a genocidal war? Like, once we're back, there's a lot going on.
3:45 or like 4 on Monday would be great. Tuesday, if you can wait, would be unbelievable for
Tuesday
us.
Tuesday would really help.
Like, that's a lot of time.
I thought it was a workout.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of U.S. fuckery in fucking Indonesia.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to hear this, gentlemen. That's enough of that talk, please. The greatest country on earth.
You do have that giant Indonesia and the United States shaking hands over a burning East Timor tattoo over your heart.
Well, I would hate for that. That's speculation. And please cut that out. Sophie, can we make a note that that should not be included in the episode? It seems a little incriminating.
So Suharto's troops, when they invaded East Timor, which they did, were equipped with the finest U.S.-made weaponry. Under the Foreign Assistance Act, such materiel could only be provided to nations who would use it exclusively for self-defense. When this was brought up to Suharto, when this was brought up to Kissinger, and he was asked whether or not selling arms to Suharto had violated the act, Kissinger responded, "It depends on how we construe it, whether it is in self-defense or it is a foreign operation." Back in D.C. on December 18th, in a meeting whose minutes are now declassified, Kissinger admitted that he knew that he and, you know, the United States were violating the statute from the nation. An even more sinister note was struck later in the conversation, when Kissinger asked Suharto if he expected a long guerrilla war. The dictator replied that there will probably be a small guerrilla war, while making no promise about its duration. Bear in mind that Kissinger has already urged speed and dispatch upon Suharto. Adam Malik, Indonesia's prime minister at the time, later conceded in public that between 50,000 and 80,000 Timorese civilians were killed in the first 18 months of the occupation. These civilians were killed with American weapons, which Kissinger contrived to supply over congressional protests, and their murders were covered up by American diplomacy. So...
I mean,
we did it again.
We did it again,
back
guys.
It really is like a
serial killer who just gets very comfortable with killing, gets kind of cocky about it, starts leaving clues. But in this case, there's no cops chasing anyone. There's nobody who's really trying to solve the case.
It's like if the Unabomber left his name on every package.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, this is okay.
A return address.
Yeah.
Ted Kaczynski, Shaq 9.
Roughly 300,000 East Timorese civilians, roughly half the population, were forced out of their homes and into camps during the fighting. By 1980, the death toll was at least 100,000 and possibly as high as 230,000. Thomas Meaney, writing in The New Yorker, has tried to make sense of this all. Kissinger's sign-off on the Indonesian President Suharto's genocidal campaign in East Timor was meant to signal that America would unquestioningly reward those who had decimated communists within their reach. In retrospect, the notion that everything America did would be duly registered and responded to by its opponents and friends seems like an expression of geopolitical narcissism. At the time, the 33-year-old Senator Joe Biden accused Kissinger at a Senate hearing of trying to promulgate a global Monroe Doctrine. But Kissinger is that guy to where repeatedly terrible people will be like, well, you're in the right here, but only because you're talking about Henry Kissinger.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's like, it's like...
In the next episode, we're going to have a moment where the CIA is a voice of reason. To give you an idea of where next goes!
And how many people have to be the voice of reason? I mean, it just is like, he's like cocky. I mean, it's just, they're just no shits given. At this point, to have no, I mean, it's not like he's had a soul throughout all of this, but you would think that once you have a soul for such a long period of time, you would start to notice the absence of a soul and at least start to act like you had a soul.
Well, good news, Gareth. Nothing like that ever happens.
Oh, fucking great.
Yeah, awesome. we're going to have fun in episode 6. But you know, now it's time to just chill out, you know, have a drink, just a nice sip of the blood of, I don't know, East Timorese dissidents, and go watch the Theranos documentary. This is Henry Kissinger get cooked by a fucking grifter.
I mean, you need only like, I forget who said it, but that's true. That's our hero. Mm-hmm. She's our hero. Yeah. This psycho who was like, hey, we can do this with your blood at Walgreens, because she got Henry Kissinger involved in I mean, just he's not a genius. There's a lot of genius it takes to just be awful and indiscriminate. Yeah, he's just like the best war networker of all time.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Episode 6, we're going to talk about his political downfall. Because he does get his comeuppance, but it's from people who suck maybe even worse, at least as bad as he does. And so there's no satisfaction in it. Like,
of course.
And he's also, it's like if
Hitler had gotten assassinated by Hitler too, who had then like expanded the, yeah. Well,
and it's also by people who are like, they're there because of him. Like they, mm-hmm. like he had to walk so they could
yes.
run.
Yes, exactly. Yes, there's someone needs to paint a picture of like Henry Kissinger, like kind of on the bow of the Titanic, holding up
right.
Dick Cheney with right, his arms right. spread wide.
Oh, that yeah. feels nice. That feels real nice, Henry. You're so, you love your mm-hmm. form.
Mm-hmm.
Let me paint you.
Kissinger walked so that Donald Rumsfeld could stagger.
Yes.
But that's going to be part 6.
Wow.
Until then, Dave.
What?
Gareth, you got any pluggables to plug?
I want to drink like Nixon.
Yeah.
We, again, look at what
we're
capitalism gets
Australia
us.
Like,
yeah,
we
will be invading the shores of Australia, searching for their WMDs, which we believe are north, south, east, and west. Mm-hmm. You can go to dolloppodcast.com, and I'll be also doing stand-up when we're there, and you can go to GarethReynolds.com for those stand-up dates. And we're also touring America this summer. We're touring the best country on earth this summer. And you can go to dolloppodcast.com for all that information.
Now, I should note here, y'all, that you guys have an ongoing argument over whether or not Gare is an appropriate nickname for you, Gareth. And I felt like maybe we could bring in a negotiator mm-hmm. to help us deal with this question.
Sure.
So I'd like to introduce to the call Dr. Henry Kissinger.
Oh my God! This is. I'm sorry I said all those horrible things.
Gary's a fine name. I think Gary works great. You look like a Gary a little bit.
Mm-hmm. He's got his nice shorts on.
He's got those nut huggers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can see the outline. You can see the whole bread basket.
Looks like a baby bird in a nest now, but it becomes a python when war starts.
They should call me Dick, shouldn't they, Dick Nixon?
Once the bombs hit the soil, I'll rip these babies.
I really hope people stop listening at this point.
I so desperately.
I stopped listening and I'm talking.
All right, everybody.
All right.
We'll see you on Thursday.
Hi, everybody. Robert Evans here. And my novel, After the Revolution, is available for pre-order now from akpress.org. Now, if you go to akpress.org, you can find After the Revolution. Just Google akpress.org, After the Revolution. You'll find a list of participating indie bookstores selling my book. And if you pre-order now from either these independent bookstores or from AK Press, you'll get a custom signed copy of the book, which I think is pretty cool. You can also pre-order it in physical or in Kindle form from Amazon or pretty much wherever books are sold. So please Google AK Press After the Revolution or find an indie bookstore in your area and pre-order it. You'll get a signed copy and you'll make me very happy.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer founded and queer run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code iHeart at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com. Shop now on tomboyx.com.